If an event which took place made you say, wow, no one saw that coming, that means you probably didn't talk to my next guest. His mental abilities allow him to see things that will happen, see inside what you're thinking, and, well, maybe most importantly, see where his paycheck has been hidden that night. For decades, he's appeared on TV and toured the world, demonstrating the power of the mind. And as his upcoming schedule of shows in New Jersey and elsewhere show, he doesn't plan to slow down anytime soon. He's also an author of multiple books all through the decades. His latest is In Real Time. We say hello to the amazing Kreskin. Good day, sir.
Chris, it's good to talk to you, and it's kind of nice to be at home base right now because this week I'm going to be returning to the Golden Nugget, which is, of course, in Atlantic City, and it's going to be on, Saturday by the way, the reason I mention that is because of the theme at the Golden Nugget Saturday, and that is it is Halloween coming up around the corner, and we had a full house last time, so we're going to have a séance again. And, you know, I'm not necessarily saying that I believe in the spirit world because I don't drink that heavily anymore. But no, I don't drink at all. But it's going to be a fascinating phenomenon because people in the audience are going to be involved.
Absolutely. Let me run down the recent schedule coming up. Obviously, Kreskin just said on the 28th, Atlantic City. On the 29th, Glen Falls, New York, at the Charles Wood Theater. Then we move into November on the 3rd at the Union County Pack in Rahway. Yeah. The Stress Factor.
Those are good. Well, those are good, but that's fine. I mean, I'm going to hire Chris as my PR man. I'm going to carry him around.
Well, I can point you to
feeling. How are you feeling, Chris?
Oh, I'm feeling wonderful as always. I mean, I have to go to a doctor maybe once a year for my yearly checkup, and everything else takes care of itself. The body and the mind are a powerful cure for anything that ails you.
It certainly is true. The other thing I want to mention is that. Tomorrow will be Monday. Is that correct?
You are correct.
It's going to be Carson's birthday, which is the same day. And is it national communication or something to do with interviewers like yourself in broadcasting? Are you aware of that? That it's it has to do with people in the industry who do interview type shows, and that's going to be Monday, the same day as Carson. So, you know, I thought it would be a good day. I'm being interviewed considerably about the series of incidents that took place. Did I discuss them with you in the past about being under the table with Carson? You know about that?
Oh, yeah, you've told a lot of stories. You know what I never asked you? How did you ever discover or develop your abilities?
Well, it's a very interesting experience because, first of all, I love comics. As a kid, I loved comics. Of course, I wasn't reading as a kid, and my mother would sit next to me and read comic books to me, and that was my beginning of my education. With that kind of background, Chris, by the way, off the record, I should have gone into politics. But no, but we read them, and one comic was given me when I was in visiting relatives in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, where my father's side of the family, my Polish side, many of them lived in Bethlehem and Allentown. At one time I had 84 relatives. So this gentleman, he must have been a teenager, but looked like a much older person to me when I was five. He gives me a comic book, and when I come back home, my mother's reading the comic, and it was a very pivotal character because it was Mandrake. Remember Mandrake the Magician?
Sure do.
And written by Lee Falk, which in the Second World War, and for years after that, was intensely popular. In fact, it was one of the most popular comics in Italy, and at that time in the Second World War, of course, we had Mussolini as one of our the three enemies, so they decided in Italy that they weren't going to print the comic because it was not only a daily one in newspapers, but it was a weekly comic. And the people went to Mussolini and advised him. They said, you don't understand, sir. This is one of the most popular comics. We can't get rid of it. So they decided to have someone rewrite part of the dialogue. They would keep the cartoon that Phil Davis did, which was a very effective-looking character. character of Mandrake and Narda, his girlfriend, all that jazz. And someone rewrote the script, and it was Fellini, the great Italian director. In fact, one of Fellini's great frustrations in his life, because he said it couldn't be done, is he wanted to do a movie based on Mandrake, and because the point of the matter was Mandrake really wasn't a magician. He had hypnotic abilities, he had telepathic abilities, and so forth. And he felt that the only way that that would be done at that time in movies is with trick photography, and he felt it would tarnish the Mandrake image. So I wanted to be a Mandrake, and then 9 years old, one of the turning points of my life took place, the first major one. I'm in third grade, and Miss Curtis, our teacher we're not going to go out to play because it's raining outside. So she decided to teach us a game, and she sent Judy Hamilton, one of my classmates, out into the hallway, closed the door, and we hit a beanbag in the room. And then she called Jane Hamilton back in and said, "Jane, you walk around. Your classmates will tell you if you're near, you're getting warm. If you're not near, you're cold." And so an old game of hot and cold. And finally, we got her to find it. And I was very disappointed I wasn't picked also to play the game. So I'm walking home a mile from school. Those were good days when you walked to school. Mile home, and got a hold of my brother. And we walked over to my grandparents' house. They were from Italy. They didn't speak much English. I loved them dearly. And when we got to their house, my grandfather built it with his own hands. I gave my brother a penny or a nickel, I don't know, remember which. I said, "Go upstairs and hide it." So I went upstairs because they lived on the second floor. They rented this first floor to make ends meet. And then he called me from upstairs, and I went up the stairs, walked into this old-fashioned kitchen. My grandmother sitting around a large table because she was a cook from when she was in Italy, and she was preparing. And I slowly walked into the kitchen and then gradually meandered into my uncle's bedroom. He was at work, and I found myself climbing on a chair because I was, of course, very short. I was only 9 years old. And when I got up, when I stood on the chair, I was in front of a window, and I reached behind a curtain rod and felt a penny. And found it, and then it dawned on me. I forgot to tell my brother to talk to me. I never told him to say anything to me. He was standing in the kitchen just watching the whole scenario. And that was, I would have to say, one of the major turning points of my life. By the way, I got to share this with you because I mentioned Mandrake. About 25 or so years ago, they were saluting Lee Falk, a group of about 20 or 30 professors, and a vast audience of graduate students from different universities at Sardi's in New York. Sardi's is a famous restaurant, you know, and they were saluting him because he had created Mandrake and he had created the Phantom. And, of course, the Phantom was a major cartoon as well. So they asked me to come there because they had heard that the influence the comic had. When I walked in the Sardi's, I saw Lee Falk. I never met him before. I went over, shook hands with him. He says, "Oh, you're Kreskin, aren't you?" I said, "Yeah," and that was it, and I walked away. In the afternoon, he had a Q&A with this large audience and about 2 o'clock, and about an hour into the Q&A, he stopped everything. He says, "Folks, I want to tell you something. The closest person alive that I've ever known of since the moment I created Mandrake, the person who's closest in true life to him, is the amazing Kreskin." Can you imagine the impact that had on me?
Which is why you've been the inspiration for movie characters and variety of ways, which, again, let me give you the website too. It's AmazingKreskin.com. He'll be appearing on the 28th at the Golden Nugget in Atlantic City, as well as a variety of other locations throughout our area. And you can get tickets. They made it easy over at AmazingKreskin.com on the calendar page. There's a link to get tickets for each and every one of Kreskin's appearances that are happening near you, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. Philosophical question. Does your ability in any way, shape, or form prove the existence of predetermined destiny?
I don't really think in that. That's a beautiful question. I haven't been asked that in that way. I don't really necessarily feel that it does, because so many of my predictions deal with the fact that I'm traveling endlessly, Chris, and now it's 2.5 to 3 million miles, the airline industry. I think they feel it's over 3 million. And I'm constantly tuning in on the thoughts of people, so I get a sense of direction. during the last major election, I got a sense of how people were going to vote, because if I said something jokingly about the election, it caused people to start to reflect and think. So I wouldn't really say that. Interesting you mentioned that, because we mentioned Carson, and he would ask me privately questions like that. He was very protective of me, and I have to say the reason I bring him up now, we're mentioning him, is that one of the incredible moments of my career I did 88 shows with him, but one of the moments was I went to his dressing room. You never went to his dressing room. He never wanted any, he always was alone sitting, as I found out when I walked in, at this little round table with paperwork on it. He was always obsessed each day with his monologue. When he got up in the morning and saw USA Today, when he was in New York or when he was living in California, he'd call his gag writers and say, I want to joke about this one. And he was very much wrapped up. But I had to see him, because I was doing something very dramatic and that had some risk to it. And I wanted to sit down and talk to him face to face. So we talked. I said, Johnny, I'm going to condition your thinking. I want you to stand up, listen to my voice, his eyes closed. And I said, this is going to happen. You're going to be all right. Your muscles will lock and all that jazz. And I won't. And then he opened his eyes. And as I was about to leave, I saw a deck of cards on the table. And I said, oh, Johnny, do you do magic anymore? He says, no. I said, I understand you weren't very good. He says, no. I said, well, I'm not a magician, but my passion with cards. He says, I know you have a passion. I laid the deck down, and 3 minutes later, I left his dressing room, and he's swearing out loud. He says, what the hell did you do? I don't believe this, what have you. Well, the bottom line is, that night, we do the show, it turns out I had Carson standing. I started counting. His body became rigid, and we stretched him between two chairs, his shoulders on one, his feet on the other. Nothing under the middle. It was no magic trick. And I had a woman come over, and I said, I want you to sit on him, and she refused to. I had dinner with her last year. She says, Chris, and I thought I'd never be asked on the show again. We finally, Fred DeCordova, his producer, and Edward Mance has come on over, and they didn't even know I was going to do this, because NBC banned me from doing this. They called me a week before and said, you're not going to do this, Chris. We heard you're going to do this. Carson called me and said, I want to tell you what I think of NBC, because they erased the first 2 years of my shows. And we went through with it anyway, and she sat on him. And that became the middle section of Parade magazine all over the Western world. When we lifted her off, and I lifted Carson, stood him up, he his eyes opened. He says, I would have thought it was a baby. I'd locked his muscles through the power of suggestion. So, and Bette Midler was an experience that she'd never forget. But 8 times after that, 3 or 4 times in New York, about 4 times when he was in L.A., and the first time he did, I didn't know what the hell was going on. I'm a guest on the show. We go to a commercial break. He says, Creskin, come over here. He pulls me over and takes the desk out from under his table, pulls me down, and we end up sitting under the desk in front of an audience with the guests to the right. They couldn't see us. His crew couldn't see us. It was a regular business desk with a barrier in the front. And he laid a deck of cards in front of me and said, Creskin, do what you did before. 2.5 minutes later, because he's aware of commercial time, we come out. He did that 7 other times. And by the way, we're using the quote now, John Romero, who was an authority on gaming in Atlantic and Vegas, and I knew him for years. He passed away last year. He's written a number of books on gaming industry. And we have his quote now. And his quote was in the book, the most dangerous person I have ever seen in the world with a deck of cards is the amazing Creskin. The casinos would rather deal to Willie Sutton. Isn't that refreshing to be compared with one of the worst gangsters around? Hey, listen, my friend, we got to talk again, Chris, because I'm leaving now. I'm going out of state now, but I want to keep in touch with you, Chris.
Absolutely. And you can keep in touch with Creskin on the 28th Atlantic City, the Golden Nugget. Find out his entire schedule. He's got a lot of shows all through our area at AmazingCreskin.com. In real time, his latest book, and you live up to your name each and every time. Amazing Creskin, thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Take care now. Take care, Chris.